okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they gonna say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome to Snacks and Giants. I'm Tom Holly. Just remember, we're on the board. S&P futures down 15. NASDAQ futures down 23. So we're maybe a little bit of a pause here, but I wouldn't bet on it because it was pretty strong yesterday. I mean, amazingly strong. I actually thought enough was enough and did a very tiny little bearish thing yesterday. But, boy, that was a bad idea. The good thing it was tiny, Matty. Good thing it was tiny. The good news is all my other stuff, I don't really have any calls against, so it's just making money every day, which is, after a while, you look at it and you go, this can't be that easy. But I guess it is if you're lying. Hey, Lou, how are you?
Good morning. I was going to say the good news is that we're on the air again.
Yeah. When were we off?
And that's about all the good news I can think of.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot, is there?
Good Lord.
I'm glad, you know, all this stuff seems to hit the fan after I'm on. So I'm always talking about old stuff, but There's plenty to discuss, and I mean, the first question I have for you is, how are things in Chicago? I saw those videos of what was happening on the Magnificent Mile. How on earth did the city let that happen?
That's a good question. I think they were sucked into thinking somehow that it was all going to be peaceful. I don't know if, I don't get it, and because
they couldn't possibly think that.
Well, they did,
and I have to think that, you know, this is a political calculation by people like Lightfoot and de Blasio and the idiot in Minneapolis and Seattle, that somehow if we take action, we can sacrifice our business class right now. Because if we take action against the looters and the rioters that are out there, we take forceful action, we're going to lose votes of the disenfranchised, and so we can't afford that.
Lou, there was one of the most amazing. Now, I think they might have done this. I can't believe she was watching it because the mayor of Calumet City, shift mayors here for a second. They were interviewing her on Channel 9. Now, they must have been setting her up, but they didn't say so. I mean, they didn't, like, you know, stick it where the sun don't shine or anything. They let her talk, and she was talking about the protesters. And meanwhile, they've got a bunch of cops across the street from this liquor store, and people are looting the hell out of it. I mean, we're talking about cars pulling up when their trunk's full. The next car pulls up. They know they're on camera. The license plates are in full view. The people are staring at, like, flipping off the, you know, and there's absolutely no fear whatsoever. And the mayor is talking about the solemn protest because of the guys in Minnesota. The guy in Minnesota.
Well,
you can't tell me that there's a person there that even knew who the hell the guy in Minnesota was.
Yeah, it's like watching Baghdad Bob.
Yeah.
During the invasion of Iraq. When,
yeah.
You know, he said, yeah, we've got this all under control as the tanks are shelling him from across the river.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what.
I keep telling my friends here in Denver, and the protests here in Denver, they've had some destruction of property. There hasn't been that much that I'm aware of wholesale looting, and then the stuff yesterday has been mostly curfew violations. But I think part of that, it hasn't really spread out of the city center, and I think part of that is because the protesters know that if they get into the suburbs, everybody here is armed. So I assume that's part of the.
Oh no! The next day they had issues there in the burbs. Matter of fact, the thing that I would love to, you know, it's easy to criticize, Lou, but it is
easy to criticize, but there's a good reason why it's easy to criticize.
Well, what I'm saying is, knowing what I know about cybercrime and knowing what I know about, you know, people like, unfortunately, Maddie years ago getting nailed by people, you know, stealing your credit card information from a ATM machine or something. And you even talk to a policeman about it and they say, what are you talking to me for? I mean, I think that in a lot of cases, we're so concerned with who gets on the force, whether you got the right pull, what about the tests, what about this? I don't think we have the right skill set. I mean, one of my buddies calls me from Naperville, and he lives near Bowling, right? Naperville, Bolingbrook, kind of go butt to butt there. And he says, everybody's social media is telling you to be here at a certain time. We're gonna demonstrate it, loot at a certain place. I mean, are the police even following us? It seems like they were, everywhere they went, they were a step behind.
Well, okay, so a couple of things. First of all, I keep telling my friends in Denver, you know, they're talking about what a horrible thing this thing was with Floyd, and it was horrible. And I said, you know, I can cite to you an example of police brutality that was 100 times worse, and that's Laquan Donald.
Yeah.
I said, 100 times worse. That was an intentional execution that was covered up by the city officials, one Rahm Emanuel and his cohorts, covered up by city officials, covered up by the police union, and did not trigger anything comparable to this. And it was on video, and I don't understand why, but you know, let's look at that if you want to see an example of police brutality. And then the next thing I said was we continue to tolerate, and I mean, I'm listening to all this cry for social justice and, you know, all this, and we get into a discussion of what that means later, but I continue to hear all this, you know, we got to fix this, this is a terrible thing. The first question I had for again, my friends that I talked to about this, is what indication do we have that what happened to Mr. Floyd was racially motivated? Do we have a single thing that other than the race of the officer involved and the perpetrator, do we have a single indication?
No, we don't.
Of racism.
Allegedly, the officer had, Kevin heard 15, I heard 19 other complaints against him.
Yeah, but the ones that were documented, agreed. He was involved in 15 incidents.
Oh, 15, okay.
So, you know, I mean, there were white people who complained about him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, was he an equal opportunity guy?
An equal opportunity bad guy.
Yeah.
If that's what he was. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think, quite frankly, I think that Ellison and the rest of those morons in Minneapolis and Minnesota have overcharged this thing, and they're in a very
well. I want to ask you at some point. There's only three states that have
create something like what happened in Baltimore, but regardless, I hear these people screaming, you know, we've got to solve all these problems, and I'm going, okay, well, first of all, I don't have any indication that race was a factor here, other than the racial differences of the two individuals involved.
Right.
Number one, number two. You want to solve this? You want to start solutions on this? Then let's eliminate public employee unions. Because if you go back and look at these cases, McDonald, this guy, any number of these other cases, this is not the first rodeo for the police involved.
Because
people who are being kept on the force because their unions have such political power that the political structure in these cities will not challenge them.
Well, let's back up. We're down the road here, but we've got to fill in a few details, I think. First of all, we talked about the Chicago stuff. They've had, you know, everybody and his brother, and they're talking about the protests and this and that, and, you know, like you say, people without really a whole hell of a lot of knowledge of the thing in Minnesota. Three things. One is, Kevin brought this to our attention years ago, or to my attention. Other people probably already knew. In this day and age, you never exactly know what's going to flare up to be the thing that everybody focuses on. That's why it's very important for people in politics to have stuff like that at the ready. I mean, right now, the Trump group, and this, I'm just going to go here for a second, it has nothing to do with Trump or whatever. It says the Trump group has figured out that the main strength among a lot of people is they're developing this hatred for the Chinese. Okay, and I'm not a big fan of the Chinese, but this hatred for the Chinese, so They actually think that he can win the election by blaming the virus on them, blaming us. But my point is, if he's correct and people focus there, it's very, very powerful, more powerful than I would ever dream it would be. I mean, in Chicago, you mentioned last week, there were six shootings downtown in basically an hour, one of them in front of our place. And yet, I've not heard or read one thing about that.
And if you follow my Twitter feed, I saw something on it that I retweeted. But you had a weekend last weekend that was one of the most murderous in like a decade, right?
Right. So I'm saying it's. But also, how much I want to ask you, not being in Chicago, the place has been totally shut down. I mean, people have been stuck in their house, can't come out. And I think some of that is I'm going out even to protest. But there have been a few people on TV, and I don't know how the commentators. I mean, if I was the person interviewing them, I would be on them like white on rice, to be honest with you. One lady they're interviewing, and I think she's white. I mean, how can I say this politically correctly? She sounded like she was white. She may have been black, but she sounded like she was like a 50s mom. And she says, well, everybody knows that a protest that's totally peaceful doesn't get any attention. I'm like, okay. And then, and then they had this African-American dude on there talking about it, and they said, what about all the protests? He goes, well, to prove a point, it's just a few broken windows and just a few goods gone. What's the difference? There is, and you know, you look at, I'm not going to say people
so
like
these
that.
These are people who are saying, who will say literally anything.
Yeah.
To try to justify their position.
Well, but here's the thing. There's pieces in society, Lou, and the more I mature, mature, whatever the term is, you end up with a different view of things, and your view changes all the time. And it's amazing to me that if you look at how different people think, I mean, if you look at, you know, my significant other and her friends, I assume she always has to pack them around on a weekend, so I get a pretty decent pulse on what a lot of people are thinking in certain areas. And those people, their view is, if you want to protest and have a problem and something like this is pretty awful, then that's, you know, that's fine. But to make light of somebody's life and his business being wrecked and stolen and basically violated to that extent, they're like, you can't do that. You deserve to get shot. I mean, because they have, in other words, the man who was talking on TV, I don't know what his job was, whether he was a government guy or what he was, but he had absolutely zero connection with what it takes to have a barber shop, to have a, you know, to have a bar, to have a restaurant, to have a liquor store that you've worked in there, you know, 40 hours, 100 hours a week for your whole life. Had no connection with what it takes to be that person.
I mean, you see this in New York. I mean, the New York Times, the Post has not been, but the New York Times has been deliberately downplaying what's happening in New York City. I mean, I'm reading accounts from people, you know, who are just watching the looters, and that's what they are, looters or rioters, you know, moving past their buildings and praying they don't come in because they have no way to defend themselves. By the way, I don't do investment advice on your show because I know absolutely nothing. But I'd be buying gun and ammunition stock right now if I were you.
Yeah, there's not that many of them.
I'd be buying stock in Smith & Wesson and Glock and Sig Sauer and Heckler Koch, and I'd be buying stock in ammunition manufacturers.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't. We seem to have a total disconnect. What we even think is like a crime ring. Mart Anthony's was open last night, so your friend Greg and I, we ran over there and we were the first people in the place, 4 o'clock, Lou, sat outside. And on the way over, Greg's saying, let me get this straight. I can protest. I can loot. I can do all these things, but God help me if I go into church and say a prayer and light a candle, that's a crime.
Because that's exactly right.
Where are we going?
What you're seeing a number of things exposed here. You're seeing the unbelievable hypocrisy of the leadership exposed.
I think it's just incompetency.
You're seeing this get the president mentality, and I'm not going to get into what happened in Lafayette Park the other day. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
It appears that they did not use tear gas; they used smoke, It appears that there were weapons in Lafayette Park that they were clearing out. It also appears it was done because the president wanted to walk from the White House to the church and make a political statement. I get all of that, but the focus now, the desperate focus by the mainstream press and a number of others to try to make this a Donald Trump issue, and I'm going, wait a minute, this is a local police issue, and it always has been. And what you're seeing happen here is the same thing that happened with the Colin Kaepernick protests. This incoherent frustration or rage or whatever it is over a specific episode of local policing that quite frankly happens in democratically controlled cities and democratically controlled jurisdictions. You're seeing this all somehow boil up into this, you know, we've got to deal with, you know, we want social justice, we've got to deal with systemic oppression. And I'm going, okay, let's start with the system. Let's start with public employee unions, because we know that's a direct link. But you're not hearing any of that.
Oh, no.
You're just hearing this incoherent, you know.
Well, there's no solution.
Systemic racism.
There's no solution.
There is a solution.
Well, but I'm saying there's no proposed.
Democrat. That seems to be what people are pushing for. You just had the New York Times. You're seeing a revolt at the New York Times with their writers screaming about the fact that the Times had the audacity to publish an opposing viewpoint by a Republican senator and you know, an attempted palace coup there, because their writers are saying we can't allow an alternative viewpoint to come out. It's insane.
Well, there are people that have the ability to do stuff like this, and I just caught the end of it. I was watching it on TV. One of the cities, Maddie, maybe you can help me out here. One of the cities, there's all these people that are going to protest allegedly peacefully, and they had all the police on the other line, across the way. So the guy, I think, who was whoever the captain or the police chief, wherever he was, he walks over and he says, you know what? To the extent that this is a peaceful protest, we're all with you, but there'll be no looting. And he says, to prove it to you, all the policemen took a knee. And it was a peaceful protest. So we don't have anybody. We have, on one end, we've got Trump acting like an absolute moron, in my mind. And on the other end, you got Jay Pritzker and Lori Lightfoot saying they got it under control, and they obviously don't. You know, so obviously the truth is smack dab in the middle, someplace, isn't it?
Right? I don't know. I do know this: the president is at this stage cannot do anything that will not draw monster waves of protest. But he has not done or been involved in any of this and taken a position in any of this other than threatening to do something that he's legally empowered to do if he believes the situation is not being controlled, and that's bringing the military to enforce civil order. He hasn't done that yet. He just mentioned it. They prepared to do it in D.C., but everybody backed off. It sounds to me like he's doing, I don't agree with his tweets, I don't agree with a lot of the stuff he says, but it sounds to me like what he's doing is legal and constitutional.
It's sort of a thing his whole 3 years. If you look at what he's said, it's abominable. When you look at what they've actually done, whether he gets talked out of it or forgets about it or something, it's not horrible.
No, it's legal, it's at least shows that he's following the advice of his people. Let me throw something else out, and I want your and Maddie's opinion on this, because I may be hypersensitive to it. General Mattis, and follow the line of other generals who have come out and criticized the president and the way this has been, you know, this reaction has gone. This raises my hackles a little bit. I am just death on retired generals, especially recently retired generals, getting into the game of politics to this extent, number one. But number two, getting into politics to the extent that they are calling for removal of an elected official like the president. They are, of course, private citizens. They have a right to express their opinion. It's not certainly not illegal for them to do so. But I have real concerns, and this may just be the fact that I'm a child of the 60s. I have real concerns about military officials, or ex-military officials recently retired, who aren't running for political office themselves, calling for the removal of a sitting president.
Lou, it's very, very difficult today. We don't seem to have, as to who gets on TV and who doesn't. First of all, you and I think, and I'm going to bring Matty along with this since he's matured tremendously, have points of view.
Good for you, Matty.
Yeah, but they have points of view. I mean, look at the people we have on this show, okay, that have incredibly well-researched points of view. And I think to a huge extent, could or should be heard sometimes, once in a while. And yet, if you don't have the name, if you talk about people running for president, they're not talking about Lou Michaels. They're talking about Oprah. They're talking about Mark Cuban. They're talking about some. And I'm going to say, if you add all those 10 people together, they haven't read half the books you've read in the last 2 years. I mean, we've dumbed the whole thing down. And I think what the generals are really saying, without saying it, is, and if you look at this dispassionately from the side, instead of a John Kennedy seizing the moment and saying something that all of a sudden makes all sides feel a little bit better, or something like that, or Roosevelt, who people counted on him and trusted him. If you just look at this, and not politically, whether you're, the man's coming unglued. I mean, you wonder if one of these days we're going to wake up and see the cabinet get him the hell out of there. I mean, we're talking about what percentage of the day is being spent watching other news shows and tweeting out about it and retweeting other people's horrible stuff. I mean, that's not my idea of a president. I mean, I think Lori are all, they're people that got the job for whatever reason. One guy got to because he was rich. Another one happened to be a black lady at a time when 10 people ran and split the hell out of the vote. Doesn't make them bad people. Doesn't mean they're not trying. It just means they don't have the background. They're not a George Marshall.
Let me interrupt for a second. Two things. Again, I want to come back to this idea that I'm nervous about generals stirring the pot here. That's number one. But the second thing is Donald Trump was not elected as a uniting leader. He was not. He was elected because he drove and pointed out, he drove the wedge and pointed out the divisions and crystallized the divisions within American political culture.
Okay, and that's not what we need right now.
Pardon me?
That's not exactly what we need today.
I don't know. I can't say that for sure, but the idea that he's somehow got an obligation to be a divider or be a uniter is lovely. But that's not what he was elected for.
So you don't think that the...
I certainly don't expect him. I mean, even President Obama, who I thought, you know, was an articulate, thoughtful, gave articulate, thoughtful speeches and was very good at this. Even Obama, you know, split the population pretty directly. And I think frequently along racial lines when it suited his purpose.
Oh, sure it did. And that was—it's a huge criticism of mine of him. The idea is you're supposed to be the president of everybody here, not just your guys.
Yeah. Well, and
that's my view anyway.
But I want to come back. I don't think it's necessarily fair to say, well, Trump is supposed to be the uniter, and he's a terrible president because he's not, because he wasn't elected that way, and that's I get that. I would love to have him be able to stand up and sound statesmanlike and say, everybody calm down. Let's talk rationally about what we've got in front of us. But that's not him.
Okay, but... the whole point is we had a president in a very, very tough time that was elected to do something because the country was absolutely flat on its ass in a depression. And 6 years later, all this crap starts happening in Europe. And the dude had to become, he basically was drums along the Mohawk, was along the Atlantic and the Pacific. He had to, the role for the president changed to being a war president. And he changed with it. He's your leader. I mean, George Bush may have wanted to do something regarding the Department of the Interior. As soon as the planes went into the building, he became a war president. I mean, that's why you have people there that are supposed to be good enough to change when the times change with them. That's what, as my mother used to say, that's why they get paid the big bucks.
I agree, and this is why, Chief, and you've heard me say this on the show, this is why I think character is the most important quality in electing a president, because I'm not interested in a guy who can manage the federal bureaucracy, although it would be nice to have somebody like that, a guy who can, because you know, the federal bureaucracy pretty much runs on its own. I'm interested in a guy and what he's going to do, or a woman and what she's going to do when you know, the bad stuff happens. When Hillary Clinton, of all people, had a great commercial. It was what happens when the 3 a.m. phone call comes in.
Lou, we got to go to break, bud.
Who do you want in charge?
Hold that thought. SP Futures down 13, NASDAQ Futures down 19. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term.
I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber, and Mr. Lou Michaels as well. I think Matt Weber just ran here and killed my informational computer while on break, so we'll have to wait for the rest of the traffic, weather, sports. But I do have S&P futures down 14, NASDAQ futures down 21 on my quote page. Pretty much everything in the Dow is down a little bit except for Boeing, and I want to talk to Lou about this, is Boeing. Thing was up 20% yesterday, now it's up another 3 today. I guess I want to talk a little about this a little bit because I am absolutely, I'm going to say appalled at how much money is going to, how we are, this, somebody is using this to absolutely make winners. And I'm going to doubt this, my computer comes back up, I'm going to have the numbers on this. And how many of the listeners are aware that Amazon went out this week and borrowed $10 billion, the cheapest anyone's ever borrowed it in the history of like U.S. businesses. And at the same time that we've had people on the show tell us that virtually every bank, due to the virus, and now due to this, but certainly due to the virus, has essentially shut down all lending to small businesses, and your credit card rates are still 25%. Yet Amazon went out, they paid, for some of it, they paid 0.4%, maybe. 0.4. I'll go through the whole list when the thing comes back up. How about doing traffic, weather, sports?
I can do that. Coming up on 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a great start on the area expressways. No issues coming in on the Edens. I'll get to the Kennedy in 1 second. Eisenhower and Stevenson are all quiet. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning, as are the suburban tollways. The big issue on I-355 yesterday is all clear, so that's good news. Lakeshore Drive looks good in both directions, too. The Kennedy itself is fine, but we do have one issue, and that's that last night there was a car pursuit that affected the Irving Park Road exit off of the outbound Kennedy. So that exit remains closed for the investigation. And then just east of there on Irving Park Road, on the westbound side of Irving Park Road between Southport and Ashland, is closed due to an investigation from last night where a Chicago police officer car was hit and the officer was injured. As part of this high-speed chase, CTA number 80 Irving Park buses are temporarily being rerouted as well. So most of the issue has been cleared from last night, but those are the remaining after effects as the investigation continues into this morning. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be a warm day. Sunshine with a high of 81, a bit warmer than that inland. Right now it is mostly clear and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, another scorcher today. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 110. Right now it's clear and 87. In sports, the big news of the day yesterday was the NBA announced that their board of governors intend to approve a league proposal on a 22-team format to restart the season in Orlando, Florida. Commissioner Adam Silver said the league's advisory committee have shared the broad details of a plan with teams to play at the Walt Disney World Resort. The plan includes 13 Western Conference teams and 9 Eastern Conference teams, 8 regular season games, and a possible play-in tournament for the 8th seed and playoffs. So it'll almost be like an NCAA tournament bubble situation. The Bulls were not among the 22 teams invited. They are out. Their season is over. Gee.
That's because they suck.
That's exactly why.
I can't believe that Lori Lightfoot actually thought Chicago was a potential place for that. She had her mind.
Well, Chicago thought it was a potential site for the Olympics too. That's just continuing craziness and giddiness on the part of Chicago leadership that didn't start with Mayor Lightfoot. Let me drag in at least one other sports related issue, and then I want to get Maddie's opinion on this general thing, and then I want to talk about Amazon. What the heck? Drew Brees, of all people, who has been a godsend to the city of New Orleans, Drew Brees says, I can't support anything that disrespects the national anthem or the flag. This doesn't sound to me like a particularly controversial statement. And yet he is being pilloried for it. And I mean, by of all people, LeBron James, who as far as I could tell, supports the incarceration of more than a million Uyghurs in China, in concentration camps.
Yeah.
But why is Drew Brees being pilloried for this? And what does it say about the state of the league? And oh, by the way, Fangio out here in Denver was just crucified for and had to grovel because he said, I don't see a race issue in I haven't encountered a race issue in NFL locker rooms in which I've worked. And he's crucified for that. What do you guys think about this, and why are we seeing this in sports all of a sudden?
It's not just in sports, Lou. I mean, it's anybody who, right now, the theme of the day is that every single black person, whoever who they are, has somehow, I don't know what it is. I mean, we all know that there is systematic views of a lot of people that black people are not treated the same way as they ought to be in a lot of ways. I understand that. But I also know that a lot of these, quote, programs swing things absolutely the other way, to where people who are undeserving that are black get stuff that nobody else gets. And it's probably not the black person who actually should be getting it. So it's, I mean, we all know that the whole mess is a mess. I mean, right?
I consider much of the social justice movement to be deliberately anti-American. And I have for some time. I think I said on the show that the NBA's reaction to what happened when the Houston manager criticized China, had the temerity to criticize China for cracking down in Hong Kong over basically China taking over the city. The NBA's reaction, I considered it to be anti-American.
Oh, sure,
in many ways, and so. This just epitomizes it, and I don't understand what the attack on Brees is. I'm sorry, the Kaepernick deal I consider to be again an anti-U.S. move to the extent that he was, and I'm not sure what he was doing. I don't think he knew, but to the extent that he was trying to be deliberately disrespectful during the national anthem. That was the point of the protest. It was a disrespectful move. People were standing for the national anthem. He said, I'm not going to stand. I'm going to demonstrate by being disrespectful. I'm going to take a knee. Okay, that's what he did. I thought he should have been fired for it, but it doesn't matter.
He was fired for it.
That's what he did. That was the point. That was trying to create the issue, or focus the issue, that he was, whatever he was trying to do. Why is Brees' statement that this is a disrespectful thing? Why is Brees' statement being hammered the way it is right now in sports, in locker rooms, and other places?
If you really, it's not that hard to understand. When I think about it, I mean, all you have to, if you put yourself in an African American's shoes, does that flag mean anything to you?
Yeah.
Like to me, if I was black, that flag means slavery. It means.
It means police
brutality. It means a systemic racism. It means a society set up against me. And why it doesn't mean the same thing to me. Now, I also understand that it's given me opportunities and we're trending in the right direction and people have fought in wars, including black people. And I understand it means something different to different people. But for Drew Brees to say what it means to him in the middle of other people saying that, you know, we're trying to put ourselves in other people's shoes, or at least attempting to put yourself in other people's shoes, just sounded very tone deaf, in my opinion. I think that's the reaction people have to his comments. Not that there's nothing wrong with the flag to him, meaning World War II and his grandfather, fighting in World War II, and that's why it's important to him. There's nothing wrong with him saying that. If it's followed with, but I also understand that, you know, to other people it means something completely different. And, I respect what it means to them.
That's not what he said, Matty. What he said was...
I read what he said.
I'm not going to be part of something that is disrespectful to the national anthem and the flag. Okay. I get that. And the idea that if I think that's... I actually think that's a fairly profound statement. which is, I will support the United States, understanding that it has problems and you know, dealing with those problems. But that's why I said I don't think that's a controversial statement. And I mean, I hear Aaron Rodgers, who I continue to think is a fantastic quarterback, but not particularly profound on other things. I hear Aaron Rodgers say, no, it was never about that. It was never about that. And I'm going, of course it was. That's why it was a protest.
Well, it wasn't about the flag, though. It was about getting attention for a cause.
Well, sure. And so you'd be disrespectful. You're making an act of disrespect to get attention. It's comparable to demonstrating during the national anthem, or I mean, in an extreme sense, it's comparable to burning the flag. You're doing something to get attention. It's disrespectful. That's always getting attention. That's the nature of the protest. So let's everybody sit down and be realists and say, okay, we understand that's what's happening, rather than trying to say, no, it was never about that. It was about something else. To the extent people are saying that, that's why Kaepernick was incoherent, and that's why this whole systemic racism thing is incoherent. Show me the data that there's a systemic racism problem in American policing. Show me the data. Show me the data that this cop was somehow racially motivated when he choked, when he sat on this guy.
Well, you can't have. I mean, I'm sort of. You guys are obviously at opposite ends of this. I'm sort of, you know, in the middle on this, because I've seen really awful stuff when I was on the South Side years ago, in terms of people's attitudes. I've seen things have gotten appreciably better, and I know an awful lot of people who are, me included, are absolutely colorblind and see a lot of bad stuff on both sides. And I clearly realize that somebody who is black that walks down the street, because Maddie and I have obviously friends that have had this issue, and you know, a couple of ladies will cross to the other side of the street, and it's got to be an awful feeling. I mean, I think I get it. I mean, I don't get it as much as if I was the guy. I mean, there's no doubt about
that.
Yeah,
you can appreciate it. You can't fully understand it, obviously. Neither can I, but you can at least sympathize with it or empathize with it.
But the idea that
I do empathize with it to the extent that we tend to assume, all of us tend to make assumptions about the people we meet based on what we can observe, and obviously skin color is a factor, and that people get categorized. I get dropped into a bucket because I'm a 65-year-old white male. You know, my kids get dropped into buckets because they're young white men. My wife gets dropped into a bucket because, you know, she's a female attorney, a white female attorney.
Oh, God.
This stuff happens.
But I don't want to see.
There's no doubt about that, but I think you guys could all appreciate that flag does not mean the same to everybody.
Well, it
how could it?
They didn't move.
What?
I'm saying, well, there's people that I know here that did nothing but give me. One of my acquaintances.
Maddie, you know, let me just approach this from the position of somebody who was in the military and served with and worked for and with and commanded or supervised people of different races, different ages, different cultures, the whole bit. All of us had different pictures of what America meant to us. But all of us at the same time understood that this was a place that was worth saving, and that this was a place worth fighting for, and that this was a place that, with all its flaws, represented in many ways the best hope for a lot of people, and quite frankly, the best hope for the world, at least during the Cold War, and with all its flaws. Doesn't mean you don't acknowledge the flaws, and it doesn't mean you don't work to change the flaws. It does mean that you have this certain basic fundamental appreciation of the country, its history, and its culture. And what I see is what I consider to be the worst educated generation in American history. with no sense of history and no sense of what went on before and no sense of the progress that's been made, jumping up and saying, and I think this goes to a fundamental misperception, the idea that we're not asking for equality of social justice. The goals of these folks is not equality of opportunity. It's equality of outcome. And the only way you're going to get equality of outcome is by force. And I think that's a fundamental disconnect in their political culture, and it is an absolutely fundamental disagreement with the way I look at people of my generation look at things.
For me, it's a much more personal thing in a sense that is again, as a decay, mature, whatever you want to call it, I see people on both sides of an argument using the same really stupid logic as the person on the other side. Now, I read, live in Chicago, I read all the statistics on the crime, and I see 75% of the murders are black people. Yet I know that no matter what the numbers show, it is wrong for me, and I've never felt this way ever, it is wrong for me to generalize and say all black people are bad, because they absolutely are not.
And because you know it's gang shooting at each other.
But what I'm saying is, I don't want the people come on TV and say guys like me, a 60-something-year-old white guy, is a whatever you want to call it, what's the word, something, a racist through and through. I'm not. I never was. So I don't want to be tarred with the same brush that I don't tar anybody else with. It's very simple. What did John Wayne say? I don't put my hands on other people, I don't mess with them, and I will not let them do it to me. I'm not going to be tarred with that brush. I am not a racist. I never was. Who called you one? What?
Who called you one?
Where's this coming from? I'm saying the idea that's systematic, that every single white policeman...
When it says... I mean, I don't think anyone has ever said every single white policeman. It's the fact that this happens all the time, and whether it's
all the
union,
time.
Whether it's Dakota Silence...
It does not happen all the time.
Well...
I mean, show me what you get are certain.
I can show you. I can show you 20 publicized cases in the last 5 years.
I will. Okay.
And
out of what?
Well, that's not the point. The point is that they're not getting charged. The point is there's a system that protects this behavior.
I'm going to say
that's the problem.
The system protects policemen.
I have absolutely no problems with that.
Yeah, I do too.
The short answer is it protects the cops, regardless of who they shoot or who they beat up.
And their point is that
in the cases.
And how many times do we see an unarmed white person get choked out for 9 minutes on a video?
I don't know about that.
But we see unarmed black people.
More unarmed white people killed than unarmed black people killed.
That's
in the data.
There's
a great rant by Tucker Carlson on Fox that if you can find it, pull it up and put it on there if you feel free to do so, in which he takes the numbers for a year like 2019 or 2018, wherever they had the last data. It's 2019, I think, Washington Post data. And he takes those data and puts them and breaks it down into there were 10 cases in whatever year it was, 2019, of police killing unarmed black men, unarmed black suspects. And he breaks those cases down. And the short answer is, in two of the four questionable cases, four of the cases were quote-unquote questionable, where the police might have used too much force. And in two of those cases, the officers were charged. If this is a systemic problem, the data don't show that. What the data show is pretty much what we've just been talking about, that you have certain bad cops that are working the streets. And I'm not saying they're all pure as a driven snow. I know they're not. But you have certain bad cops that tend to get into these situations, and that the system, and Maddie, you are correct, and this is, so now we talk about the system that is in place with regard to police officers that protects them. Now we talk about fixing that. And if people want to start talking about those kinds of solutions, hey, I'm all in.
Because
that's a problem, and this is the scariest thing. And you guys know this because of your interactions with the Chicago PD. There, but for the grace of God or whatever, go you, me, our children, our friends, our spouses, any of those people could have been in that situation, because that's what it looks like when you look at the data.
I think with this particular guy, and I don't know this, but I'm gonna suggest that the investigation will show that he did somewhat the same thing and 10 other people. And
the fact that three other guys stood and watched him leads me to believe he's done this a lot.
I think that you will look at those three people, and they should be at best fired. And I would say that if you went back and found five other instances, the people who watched that time should be fired as well. I'm absolutely for, because
well,
I think
they,
everybody
did they finally had, fire. Did they finally fire those cops that watched the McDonald?
I'm not sure. If they
murder?
I think who I'm not positive on that. I don't know if they appealed and got back on or not. I don't know. We'll find that out. But Lou, this is. I think that you're going to find if. This is the way I believe about people. If 80% of the policemen are white, 20% are black, if you look at 100 instances of people doing bad stuff, you're probably going to find 80 of them with the white guys and 20 of them with the black guys. Because I think people are pretty much the same. And this is not being a bad person is not a white problem or a black problem. It's a people problem. And the idea is on a police force, you can't have people like that. But I also know that in my feeling, because I had a lot of police in my family, there's no such thing as an easy arrest. We're not every single arrest where somebody gets handcuffed, there's a certain amount of, I'll use the term, violence. You don't say, here, put on your handcuffs, sir, and the guy does it. I mean, this is not, people have an incredible amount of, especially if you're on drugs, you're pretty much super strong or think you are. I mean, sometimes what a video guy across the street thinks is the proper amount of force, maybe it isn't if you're the guy that the guy's struggling against. I mean, these are all very, very difficult decisions. And I think over time, you get a pattern with certain policemen that constantly go over the number, the line. And I think those people gotta get the hell out. And I think that needs to happen. We all do, right, Matty? Nobody's disagreeing on this.
I think Chris Rock said it best. I don't know if you've seen his bit from a few years back where he said, everyone always says it's a few bad apples, and I totally get that. Every job probably has a few bad apples, but there are certain jobs where you cannot have bad apples.
Absolutely.
Such as...
I couldn't agree more.
And then the joke is, if you're a pilot at American Airlines, you can't have bad pilots.
No.
You just can't. There's certain jobs that you can't.
But some aren't as good as others.
Some aren't as good as others, but he goes, he's had a couple close calls, but, you know, or he's had one crash, but he survived. We're going to keep him on. You can't have that. Just like with cops, you can't have bad apples.
He mistook Wrigley Field for the airport a few times.
Right.
What's the problem?
It's a great bit. But
absolutely agree. These guys are authorized by the state to use deadly force in routine encounters with civilians. That's why I made the comment. There, but for the grace of God or whatever, go you, me, Maddie, everybody. If we run into one of these guys, it the potential for it to go terribly is exactly that. And we're seeing more episodes of maybe how badly our local outfits do in screening for these people and getting rid of them once they've identified them. I mean, in Chicago, what's the rule in Chicago, Chief? You can't use a disciplinary incident of more than a year old. Is that it? I think you can't reach back more than a year on somebody's record.
But it comes
to assess
down
whether they've got problems.
Well, Lou, it comes down to when you hire people. And again, this is, everybody forgets about this part of it. It used to be that when you took, well, I'll go back way back. My mother said that when they took the sergeant's test when my dad was on the force, you didn't put your name on it, and it was $5,000 to become a sergeant. All right, so let me just guess that you didn't get the best sergeants. She says,
let me throw out
but now
got
we've got
example.
But now, but no, Lou, let me finish this for a second.
Right. Because,
but now if you give a test to 5,000 people, you don't pick the top 1,000, be it
no,
black, white, or whatever. You decide that the top 2,000 are, quote, qualified, and somehow through some formula of race and God knows what else, you select people. Now, I'm not, what I'm saying, we're not, I mean, if you went to the Coast Guard Academy, okay, which is where they teach you the those guys are fire engineers or such a thing. They are the best because they're taught to how to stop fires on ships, which are the worst things on earth. If one of those guys comes here after being a Coast Guard for 10 years, tries to get a fire department, he can't. He's got to take the test like Mickey DeMolp or me. Now I'm going to say that he should be put on that fire department way before I should. I mean, we don't hire the best and brightest, and we don't get the best and brightest.
Let me give you two cases. First is a case, I believe, from the early aughts, 2000. I think it's Connecticut. Guy tests for a police exam, and he scores. It's a sort of an aptitude test, and he scores in the top whatever. And his IQ is the IQ test that was part of the process shows him to be way above average, like 130 or something like that. And he wants to become a police officer. He scores high on the aptitude test. Everything else, they reject him based on his intelligence. And they said, they literally said this, we don't want people who are too smart in this job because they'll get frustrated and they'll leave. And the state Supreme Court validated that decision-making process as a proper exercise of discretion. Okay, so that, keep that in the back of your mind. Then reach back to a case study from 1939 in New York City where they had an open, strictly merit-based police exam. And again, in 1939, height of the Great Depression is still going on. Roosevelt never solved it, whatever. Depression's still going on. So the 30,000 guys that apply for those 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 openings were, you know, these were desperate people, and you had very highly qualified people. And they took the top, whatever it was, top 3,000 of these guys, or 1,000 of these guys. Out of that group, they had fantastic performances. They had guys who went on to become leaders in the police force, like a couple of police commissioners, senior police, you know, commanders, guys who went on to become judges and lawyers with this police background. Hugely successful group. That was about the last time that happened. We don't do that anymore. And as you noted, Chief.
I've been ranting about not judging people by their looks.
It's because they're captured by this, what I consider to be this social justice narrative, that what we don't want is equality of opportunity. We want equality of outcome. We want the same results for people based on their race or gender or whatever. And you can't do that except by forcing the curve down or up, whatever.
Well, you could do it if you had an educational system that said if you want to be a policeman, you come here for 6 months and you'll learn, and that way you'll do very well on the test. We don't do that either.
I agree. We don't. But even that, I mean, if you do that on merit, you don't end up with a population equal distribution.
But
you don't.
I don't think you're ever going to get, equality of outcome.
No,
but you need to get. You need equality of opportunity.
I agree.
Think that's what you need to strive.
So let's go to a place, New York City, which is basically.
Well, we got to dash here, but we got to go. But I have one question for you. You're not ever supposed to judge a book by its cover, and a person by his look. Does this guy look like he's Timothy McVeigh's like brother or something? This policeman. He looks like he belongs
in some
right wing camp somewhere. Is that just me, man?
I can't make that call.
I'm just saying. I looked at him.
We're looking at a local problem who's become the flashpoint for, as Maddie said, a lot of frustration.
Well, yeah. Anyway, SP futures down 9. NASDAQ futures down 775. Thanks, Lou. Talk to you next week, buddy. Stay safe.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Something happening here.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures up 725. I have a feeling we're going to stay down here. We can't really stay down because the Fed is just buying away. NASDAQ futures down $4.
By the way, our buddy David writes in, or sent us this thing here. Illinois taps Federal Reserve for $1.2 billion in emergency funding. Chief, are you good for this?
I'm going to have to write him a check.
Don't we already do that?
I don't know. This is almost like to me, and David knows. We go back and forth a little bit. Even though he's way to the right of me, he sure knows that I've when it comes to money. I don't know if anybody's more conservative than I am, because I honestly believe that if you do it wrong, innocent people end up paying in the end.
Is that a nice way of saying cheap?
Conservative
with money?
Yes. Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, I'm talking about not mine, because I'm generous with mine to people, but what I'm saying with other people's, I know that when you do stuff like this.
How did you?
Hey, Fari, how are you? We're talking about Illinois. I mean, we're talking about states that are acting very, very independent, that if left to their own devices, their unemployment checks are going to bounce in a month. I mean, so it's very hard. It's hard to be independent when you're broke, man.
We've all figured that.
I mean, everybody we know knows that. And I think
it reminds me of Mrs. Murray.
Yeah, well, the people that are
the upkeep of the shoe room. She needs new shoes every week.
Well,
and the guy's broke. He can't collect any vig.
Well, let's just say that the people we have in charge. I mean, when we talk about keeping things shut down for this or for that and doing, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be afraid of the virus. I never said that. Matter of fact, I agreed totally with them the first 15 days to see where they were.
And let's state for the record that you're not trained in medicine, correct?
But I've been known to read a book without pictures.
Well, I'm talking about trained. In medicine.
So
using common sense.
I'm reading things that people are trained, have written, and I'm piecing together the things they all agree on, and trying to cut away the politics.
Your Honor, I'm just stating the state of mind here. Go ahead, sir.
Right. The thing I am trained in is monetary policy, and that's got me even more concerned than the virus, for God's sake. But I mean, we're talking about people that Jay and Lori are acting like they're flush. How's that for a Southside term? They're not flush. They're broke. When you decide that you're gonna, I mean, this whole thing. Are these people? I mean, if I was if people live on the fourth moon of Alpha Centauri, that's a sun, the fourth planet of Alpha Centauri, and they're watching this on TV, they must think this is I Love Lucy, for God's sake, the funniest show they've ever seen. We've got people that are broke acting like they're not. We've got people borrowing when they have no chance to pay it back. I mean, we've got people that have,
and we don't have the second wave yet,
right? But we have buildings that our tax system, that's where we get all our money from. We've shut them down ignorantly. We could have done a social debt. We could have done a lot of stuff. We've shut them down ignorantly.
You're missing the problem. We ignorantly said it doesn't have any problem. It's not going to do anything to us. We did interviews back in early February. We didn't create the virus. We created the impact.
Right. But what I'm saying, as far as that,
so there's a price to pay.
But we have Fari's Blue Jeans store closed, and we have Amazon getting every benefit. We never once checked on the Amazon distribution system to see if those people were far enough apart or anything like that. We didn't care about them. All we knew is they were delivering crap to our front door, and if we wanted blue jeans, we got it, and we got it pretty fast. We didn't care. But what I'm saying is Amazon doesn't pay any taxes. The guy in the building does. So you would think, even if you were the biggest bleep on earth, when you're broke, I mean, if I have a renter in my building, I mean, I don't try and put the renter out of work as opposed to somebody else. The renter is the guy paying me, for God's sake. I mean, do these guys not have any common sense? Did they not?
Well, look, this is happening in Florida. We have no state income tax. And by shutting down, we have no visitors. We have a hospitality tax, right?
Yeah. So now what are you going to do? I mean,
well, DeSantis, I mean, I know, I understand. The government said he went to Harvard. Great. Harvard Law, of course. But I guess somewhere in there, he did 2+2. And he starts getting zero. Not even four anymore.
Yeah.
2+2 is zero now. He has no state income tax, and he's got, people can't come in. He shut down the roads, shut down the airports, and now there's no hospitality tax. And he can't print money. Hello.
Yeah. Well, but if
welcome
you can,
to America.
Well, I mean, but you would
and the
think,
market is rallying. You figure this one out for me.
But this is going on. Amazon just went out. I was talking about it earlier, but we had more of a discussion with Lou. They just went out. They're borrowing stuff. What did they pay for their 40-year bond? 2.6% or something?
Yeah, probably. I won't be surprised. Yeah,
I mean,
is it, I mean, they you have did, to realize. Did you realize the cash flow they create?
But these I won't call them idiots. These bumps.
I'm not talking about taxes. I'm talking about cash flow. The cash flow they can demand any rate they want.
But these people. When I say these people, I'm not talking about race, I'm talking about politicians. And I guess, can I use the term these people for politicians,
sure.
Maybe?
Yeah, of course.
Or is that politically incorrect, too? These people don't quite get...
Nothing is correct anymore.
Oh, no, but anyway. These guys are borrowed money, okay, at 2.5% or 2%. They got one of the $1 billion is for 4.4 for the year or 2 years. 0.4. Now, okay, yeah. So you've got, they're competing with your bricks and mortar, your local people. You shut those guys down. Now the banks have pretty much stopped. I guarantee you that the chief at Fari's blue jean store that shut down walks into Lakeside or BMO Harris or wherever the hell we're going, Citigroup. I'm going to say that don't let the door.
Goldman Sachs. Yeah, Goldman Sachs.
Don't let the door hit you in the ass.
I want
to
do right.
We want a loan to for until Lori decides to let us back open again. Mr. Homsey, sir, please don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. You're not going to get that loan at any rate. Yet, right. We had another place. We let them do all the deliveries. We don't care what their personnel are doing. And half the time, they don't even charge taxes if it's coming from out of state. And we're paying people unemployment and everything else. We don't have any money. I mean, even if you, whatever your politics is, that is so damn ignorant. I can't even. Man, am I going nuts here? I mean, this, you couldn't, if you wrote this in a book and called it as fiction, would you sell a copy?
No,
no, of course not.
Yet,
already no.
I mean, what are we doing? And now we have a Fed.
Let me read you a little thing I wrote last night, right before the close, because I was angry. Okay, but and this is writing through Time and Digest. Let me say this. Hold on. Where is this thing? Hold on, Murray. There we go. It started like to follow. Because we got to stop it again. Okay? Again. So I'm thinking, what the heck is going on? So this was... what is this, man? Hold on. No. Hold on. Jesus, I'm missing it. Go ahead. I'm going to find it.
Well, I have a question for you, Fari.
Say what you're saying.
I have a question for you. You're moving into what the Fed's doing. I have a question for you.
It is in a way like that. Sure.
But I mean, in full disclosure, even though I'm, I have not sold calls on their stuff, which I always do.
So okay, here we go. We went to short the market on Friday, okay? Over the weekend. And we started saying we are walking into a perfect storm. Remember the movie Perfect Storm with Clooney? In Nantucket, I guess he was a fisher.
Yep.
A commercial fisherman. And so now, this is Wednesday afternoon, around 3:25 yesterday, Eastern. I go back again to Jim over at Time and Digest saying, hey, dear Jim, what perfect storm. We have such a wonderful president, a wonderful economy, a wonderful governor. Remember, I'm just answering something about him. A near perfect public health system. Okay, public health system. I'm not talking about the insurance and all that. And a wonderful race relations throughout this great nation. This must be why this market keeps rising every day, day after day. So I said, and having said that, there's no place for shorts here. We're going to step aside for a few days because it stopped out in 3 days, so we got to. And all of our short-term figures are uber overbought and poised to drop, but we're still rising. So we'll re-engage once this madness is over. You know how many emails I got back that quoted the last sentence? Once this madness is over, I mean, these are guys have been with me 5-10 years up and down through all these markets, and we've nailed it. We can't nail this one.
I'm going to say
it doesn't make any sense. I mean, Marcus Esposito.
Don't take this as
he wrote to me the other day saying, "Barry, none of this makes sense. I'm with you. Get out of the way."
Don't take this as any sort of criticism, Fari, because I would not criticize my good buddy.
Oh, no, you can criticize me. I don't care.
I'm going to say that...
I'm Joe Bert.
The one person, okay, that should understand what's going down here is you. And I'm kind of surprised that you're not reading this.
Go ahead. I'm going to see what I'm doing wrong, please.
Take a look at... I know you're been American for a really long time now, but you're from Iran, okay?
I'm American by choice.
I understand that.
Not by default.
What I'm saying is sometimes, if you've watched what's happened in your home country,
right,
over the last 4 or 5 years,
4 years,
four whatever, even 4 or 5 years, you're going to see.
Okay, I was saying 40. Go ahead. Huh?
You're going to see an incredible increase in the money supply. You're going to see. Basically helicopter money like we're doing here.
Good.
And you're going to see that the Iranian stock market in Iranian money has done nothing. Mm. It went from, in 2017, it was 102,000, okay, whatever the currency is. Beginning of this year, it was over a million. It, because the stock market, it had nothing to do with the stock market. It had to do with all the money that was being poured into the system. You got a horse bleep president. You got a horse bleep. You got the same COVID problems we have here, only worse. You've got everything that you just rattled off wrong with America is twice as wrong as Iran, and yet the stock market went up every single day because the money, it had nothing to do with the value of the companies going up. It had to do with the value of the currency going down. It's the exact same thing. I went back, well, I'm going to go back, but from memory, I'm going to say from years 1968 onward, when we had the big inflation in the late 70s and all that started it. I'm going to go back today if I can find it. I know I organized everything for you, so now I don't know where anything is, kind of a thing. You know, imagine that. Mm-hmm. I have the money supply numbers going back to 1945 or something. I'm going to say that the greatest increase in M2, even during this period of inflation, which caused all kinds of hardship in this country, that we were never more than 12, 12.5, 13% increase in a year. This year we're going to push 30, maybe 25. We're not even on the same planet. So to think for a second that this is a stock market phenomenon, like all the talking heads all day long say, it just isn't. It's not about rotation into this industry. There's relative stuff happening, yes. Some stocks are moving up faster than others, and you want to be on those versus the others. That part I get. But the idea of the absolute level, I mean, the market is up, the money supply is up something like 18% this year. The economy's down 18%, and the market's even. Do the math. How do you think?
Yeah. Stock market is joining it, but the biggest Ponzi scheme in the world has been the Treasury bonds.
Yeah.
Because we keep paying back people with the new money. We haven't paid anybody with our money.
Well, that's right.
We paid it with new money. Now the stock market is going there too.
But Farid, the numbers are so big. I make it sound like I understand this stuff. Because I have some background.
Well, but you should.
But I have no idea what $3 trillion in three weeks even means.
Sure.
That's more than the GDP in 1980.
Yeah.
When we were making money, we were at
$1 trillion when Reagan came in.
Yeah.
Right. When Obama came in, it was at $10 trillion. And now, right now, we're at $25 trillion.
Yeah.
And God knows how much is off the books.
Well, I think the four is off the books.
Fed,
if you look at the
I'm not counting the Fed. I'm talking about Treasury.
But if you look at the numbers they show you, it's like 21.6. So guys like Carl and you would dig in and find out.
No, it's showing the national debt right now is showing 25 plus.
Well, they're digging.
Not 21.
The indebtedness.
We got $3 trillion just last month or two.
Okay, but the national debt is. I think the numbers are, and I could be, well, ask Carl tomorrow because he knows he's better than I do. I think the numbers are.
I'm just going with what's that the track is running on the internet.
Well,
I don't know what the source is. They claim it's Treasury, I'm going there right now as we speak.
I'm going to go do that as well. But I think the issue is that the reason why there's two numbers, Fari, is because there's an
indebtedness. We're at the $26 trillion right now.
Okay, but there's
25, 8, 90.
Right.
8, 6. 25. 860, say 26
right.
trillion.
But I think there's also
this is just this round, and we're going to have the largest ever. Are the Trumpkins listening? Where are the Trumpkins? Wake up!
Well, you know what's
the largest federal deficit ever.
You know what's interesting?
I remember, we went from 3.5%, the lowest unemployment in February. By now, we got non-farm tomorrow.
Right,
we're going to be there 40 million. Unemployed, near what it was, probably more. I don't know what was the unemployment in Great Depression. Remember, we have a smaller base.
I'm going to say 20. It was in the 20s.
Not percentage, but body count.
I actually have those numbers buried somewhere. I'll find them for next week.
Is that more than 40 million? Because remember, our population was smaller.
The population was way smaller. No way we had. But I mean, we had a lot of people working. A lot of firms.
15 million in the Great Depression.
All right, now my next 18? Question, Manny.
Okay.
There's always, there were.
You're going to go from 2.5 to 20-25 now, and the second wave has not hit yet.
There were.
And we abandoned the pandemic updates and the whatever they call it, the working group. That's gone. I think pretty soon they're not going to even make any masks. Forget it. We're going to go. We're not going to Carolina. We'll go somewhere else for the National Republican Convention. We don't need any masks.
Matt, my question on one of those numbers you came up with, there were a lot of companies during the Depression, Singer Sewing Machine in Chicago being part of one,
right,
that always kept people one day or 2 days a week. I wonder how those were counted in those numbers. I never actually got an honest answer to that in all my years of education. Because there were a lot of, I think my grandfather might have worked 1 or 2 days a week as a boilermaker. So
who knows what the real number was, but the published number is 15 million.
Right.
Which, it is another,
what's
another
percentage?
Little bit,
percentage 25?
Yeah. Tommy,
I'd have to look.
U.S. federal debt to GDP ratio. In 1960, it was 52.8%. Remember, this is live, but data changes. Changing. Of course, the new one, not the history. In 1980, 20 years later, it was 34.59. So close to 35% in 1980, okay? This is when Reagan came in. 2000, when Clinton was leaving, it was almost 58%. So we went to 52, to 35, to every 20 years now, to 58 almost. 20 years later, we're at 124.3. I'm sorry, 24. 124.
Sorry,
we're just starting this problem. We're nowhere out of this.
I was on a guest appearance in Joan Esposito's show, which I do from time to time. I love Joan. I mean, I remember when we were both young, she was on TV. But she, we ended up the subject of debt, and she says, "Well, I don't have any debt." And I go, "Yeah, you do." And she says, "What do you mean?" I go, "You know, the debt per taxpayer on the national debt's $208,000. What do you mean you don't have any debt?"
She goes, "That's what transfers 208."
I said,
"Debt per citizen is 78,000.
Yeah, you know, but she's
half the citizens in the country do not have $1,000 in their retirement fund.
Well, state debt per citizen is 3,500.
I mean, who's going to pay for all of this?
Well, we're seeing
they're going to come to retire.
But we're seeing what's happening in Chicago.
Well, maybe they're going to come to you now. Like,
well, you know
check,
what?
Right?
Well, the federal level, it's obvious to anybody who's ever had a monetary economics course, they're going to try and double the money supply as a way of cutting the debt, the real debt, in half. They're going to try and inflate their way out of it, like unscrupulous governments have done since the 1500s, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm,
you devalue your way out of your debt.
No, since the fall of the Roman Empire.
Well, yeah, we devalue your way out of the debt.
Yeah,
the greatest example of that is the Weimar Republic. They eviscerated their citizens. They buried every citizen, every piece of savings.
And now we have Venezuela, same thing.
Yeah, and
what's that country in Africa? They had $100 billion check, $100 billion note that would give you like
I don't know. Well, Venezuela's got to be close. I have a question. Yeah. Talking about being off the front page, and I'm not asking you this for. You know what I have to do? One of the listeners, he sent me this thing, and he said, "You got to go back to start reading The Economist," and you know he's absolutely right, Farhi. I need to because
that's a great. Yeah,
but you know, what do
actually,
do I need to read?
Editor comes on, tries to call you often on Sundays.
Yeah, but do I need to read more bad news about other 30 countries I've conveniently forgotten about?
Well, here's the beauty of The Economist. If the editor publishes something for herself, her name is there. Nobody else has a name. All articles are published without a name.
Well, for those,
is that they're not talking about their name. They're talking about the newspaper. They are scrutinizing the world, but shining at The Economist. Person is there for their ego. They just need to do a great job.
Well,
and it's an amazing newspaper. Yeah, I mean, but the magazine, I love it. I've had it around me. I won't say I've read every copy, but I'd say probably. That's about time I got enough money to afford it in the early 80s.
I think I bleeped up on this. I think what I'm talking about is the Journal of Political Economy, which is the actual, it's a serious pamphlet that comes out every month, and they have at least a few pages on like every country. So if you want to find out what's going on in sub-Africa in the economy, that thing will tell you what what their GDP is and all that. So I mean, it's a way of...
And very unbiased.
Yeah, but
because it's not written by same one person, and you don't know who they are. And they don't show up on TV as an editor. You have no clue what the bias is or why or how come, and it's all basically neutralizes because of the checks and balances they have.
But I want to know how people are living in Venezuela. They basically don't have any currency for what, 3 years? I haven't seen them in the news anywhere. Have you, Manny? I mean, how do you get on a bus down there, for God's sake?
I have no idea. Yeah.
I mean,
they're down the street from you.
By the way, Fari, their stock market went way up too under the. What do you think? Are you neutral here, or what are you? You got 30 seconds.
I'm neutral. Yeah, I can't take the long. I can't go long here, and the shorts are killing me. So I'm neutral. This madness is enough. Listen, last week we nailed it. 1130 points on the Dow we took. In 3 days. Now, I lose it 1%, I'm out. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going to wait for my returns. I don't see my returns around the corner. I'll wait when it comes.
All right, buddy. Talk to
you
next
week. I'm not
going to
give my lead back. You know, we're over S&P. Over S&P, we've done 128% right now. Over S&P.
Well, good for you.
I'm not going to give that back.
No.
Not this easily. Yeah.
It's not what you make. It's what you keep, buddy. Right? S&P futures down 10, NASDAQ futures down 7. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks, David Edelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Well, everyone plays Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Just Brent Weber on the board. SP Futures now down 18. We came back to be almost unchanged there for a bit. Now we're down 26 on the NASDAQ as well. And I've got the Dow down 35. We've got individual stocks still blowing up another $9. They were up like $20 yesterday. How much money the federal government must be agreeing to give these guys? Isn't this the firm that Trump was going to spank because they were charging too much for Air Force One? Well, times have changed, huh? DAX up. Down 33.3%, but they had a huge up move yesterday. FTSE down 15.2%. CAC down 1.6. Call that flat. Now the ECB has expanded pandemic bond buying even more today. One of these days, people are going to say this is just too much. Nikkei up 81.4%. Shanghai down 4. Call that flat. Hang Seng up 40.2%. So really not much going on. International stuff today. Bonds 0.745. So come back from the 0.69 number we were at mostly all this week and last. The bond, minus 0.36. Now, that's the highest we've seen that for a while, even though it's minus, moving more towards zero. And get a load of this, Maddie. Japan, minus 0.026. That is the highest we've seen in, like, a real long time. Wow, actually, 0.2%, you get positive in Japan. That's crazy. Oil down 33 cents, 36.96. Brent down 10 cents, 39.69. Natural gas, 182. RBOB, 112. We've got gold bouncing back some today. Up $7 at 17.12. It was up more earlier, but it's come back a little bit. Silver unchanged at 17.95. Copper, 2.48. And I had a position in one of the stocks that, well, it used to be the stock that you bought when you thought copper was going up was Freeport-McMoRan. But then they bought a gold company, Matty, and it's gotten very blended. It's like 20-25% gold now, so it's not as much of a copper thing. But there aren't a whole lot of places to buy if you think copper's going up. And I was messing around with that last week and was long a little bit and did all right with that. But now it's going up this week and I don't have anything left. So, yeah. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. It looks like we have a crash on the inbound Stevenson, northbound at Central Avenue. That's blocking the right lane. A cruiser on the scene trying to get that cleared up, but that's causing a bit of a slowdown as folks navigate around that. Everything else is looking good out there. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Edens are all quiet. Lakeshore Drive looking good, as are the suburban tollways. We do have a crash down on I-80 out near Joliet on the westbound side before Francis Road. It's in the construction zone, so that's not good either. So you have a limited construction zone area and a crash to go along with it. So some congestion on the westbound side near Joliet of I-80. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, a hot and steamy one today. Warm temps and humid as well. A high of 81. 84 inland, 81 downtown. Right now it's overcast and 72 in the city. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 110 today. Right now it's clear and 87. In sports, the big news of yesterday, of course, was the NBA announcing its return. The NBA Board of Governors intends to approve a league proposal on a 22-team format to restart the season in Orlando, Florida. The top 16 teams in the Eastern and Western Conferences will be joined by teams currently within 6 games of 8th place. in the two conferences. So the bubble teams, if you will, are New Orleans, Portland, San Antonio, Sacramento, Phoenix, and Washington. The Bulls will be left out.
I thought they were pretty close to eighth place.
No. The play-in tournament will include the number 8 and number 9 teams if the 9th and seed finishes the regular season with within 4 games of the 8th, sources said. In that case, the number 8 seed enters a double elimination tournament and the number 9 seed a single elimination tournament. So they're going to play an 8-game regular season to determine the final seeding, and then they'll take it from there. So it'll be interesting and probably pretty exciting. Looking forward to that. Chief.
You think it's worth all that training for 4 games? Or whatever it is.
You're getting paid what these guys are getting paid? Hell yeah, it's worth
it.
Well,
yeah, I guess.
Kidding me?
But I'm saying it seems a little odd. Well, it's all odd, I guess. David, how are you?
I'm fine.
Europeans put more money in, David, so you better be long somewhere. Just saying, you know.
I have a couple hedges on, but I'm pretty, you know, I wouldn't say I'm overly long, but yeah, I'm long.
I took my first dip into the toe into the downside yesterday, and I did, and of course got slapped upside the head. I took a very small dip into the, we opened up so much yesterday morning, I think I paid like 8 cents or something for a spider put spread yesterday afternoon, because they have expirations on Wednesday. And the NASDAQ went from up 40 to down 10 right after I did it, and I go, hey, maybe I caught this one right. Right around, went right back up, never had a chance. I mean, now this morning, I don't know, I would have been right, but not yet. Timing is everything. But the thing of it is, I just did that marginally, David, because I'm so long every place else. I mean, I haven't sold any calls or anything, and my puts are a little bit out of the money. I probably should be rolling those up a little bit. But I mean,
it felt like melt up, almost exhaustion. And I'm not trying to call a top, but if you remember, I said 31.30. You know, was like. You know, even last week I said that's probably the extent of the futures upside. There was big resistance, you know, up there, huge. Front month S&P June contract 31.2950 at yesterday's high. It just felt like, just like you get exhaustion at the bottom where there's just no more sellers left. It honestly felt like, you know, the shorts had bought their way out. And there were no more buyers.
Well,
and I'm not calling a top and saying, you know, huge down. You know, maybe it goes back to 30.05. Maybe it goes down to 2,900. Maybe it doesn't even get that far. But it just felt like in a matter of a few days to melt up like that, I felt like it was pretty close.
Well, it was the fourth day. So I'm still, when I say bullish, I'm bullish in the market pricing because of the currency. I don't think that these companies are worth more than they were last year. How could they be, for God's sake?
Right.
But in terms of the dollar, they are. You know, and in terms of, you know, other stuff, maybe not. So, but I'm not going to go in. I've already said that 100 times. But the weird part is, David, is that you have to, when you look at these Amazon, I honestly don't know what these people are doing. I looked at the Amazon bond issue, and a couple of guys here in the office have said, that if we look back on this, if we all survive another 40 years, we're going to look back and say that could have been the top, that the Amazon was able to get that kind of money for that price. And we
at that duration.
Yeah, what they the 40 year was what, 2.6? 2.8, something like that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So I mean, it was oversubscribed.
And they don't need it. They're just taking advantage of the rates. They got plenty of cash.
How could you and I possibly manage somebody's money and somebody's dad drops $1 million with Chief or David, and the first thing we did was buy a 40-year bond at 3% or something? God's sake.
Or less.
Or what was the 1 year? 0.4?
I don't know the duration. There were some that went at 0.15.
Yeah, they were like 6 months or something. Yeah,
0.15.
Well, I don't. Yet you hear our politicians at every level, despite whatever yakking they're doing, all they do is talk about helping small business and getting back together after the COVID. Blah blah blah. And in the last 2 months, Amazon is borrowed money for nothing, every small businessman we know is probably either the banks are shut down to them. I've heard stories, David, that a small businessman walking in and saying, I need money to hold over to, I need a loan to hold me till I could open up my store again. The bank guy's saying, don't let the door hit in the ass. I mean, I've heard that total banks have shut down, Chase, other places. I mean, I've heard this. Now, I mean, I haven't gone to everyone and tried to get one. That have essentially shut down and said, we're not giving any small business loans in this uncertain environment we're in. Now, the place is shut down. Amazon's selling the stuff. We don't even like Amazon because they don't charge taxes half the time. And now we're giving them money at whatever 2% on average or something for 40 years. I mean, are people that big a bunch of buffoons that they don't see this happening?
I don't have an answer. I get, you know, there's just enough people out there, you know, and I've heard from some of them myself. You know, I'm getting 0.01%, you know, yearly from Chase on cash deposits, or, you know, virtually nothing even in money market, 0.1%, and I'll take anything. I'll take anything.
How many people in this country, David, do you think, whether it's in an IRA or not, I mean, there's a penalty in an IRA or not, have 100 grand in saved up wealth? I mean, there's a lot of people, by the way, that don't. Because, Maddie, we did how much in terms of how many people could actually come up with $1,500 if they needed cash?
Pretty small percentage.
Pretty small percentage. But say, how many people do you think have 100 grand in a bank or something earning, I'll give them 0.3%, that have a credit card balance of, say, $1,000 and are paying more on the credit card balance than they're getting on $100,000 in the bank? They're scalping themselves and don't even realize it.
They're scalping themselves out of business,
yeah,
paying 18 to 24%.
Yeah.
And I mean, 0.3 is generous from what I've heard. Money market on some of these, you know, brokerage firms, most of them are 0.1.
Yeah, yeah. This whole thing is and we haven't said it in a while, Maddie, so maybe I should. How come you're not capable, Maddie, of getting this tweeted out to somebody? The Chiefs, three principles for trickle up. Well, let's lower the credit card rates down to some usurious number like 15, which should be plenty since everybody else is paying 0.1. Lower that down to 15, drop student loan rates by, let's say, like a point and a half, which still leaves them way higher than the government's going out and getting money. Government's charging people what? The blended rate for most people, Maddie, is what, 6.5%, and the government's paying what, 0.1 or 0.5? Let's drop that a little bit, and let's raise the number that you can take off on your taxes on capital gains from $3,000, which is absurd, to like $150,000. I'll bet you wouldn't, the economy's not going to bounce back if you do those three things, but I'll bet the people talk about all the time and never help actually would get helped dramatically with what I just said. Yet it'll never happen. It'll never happen. I mean, out of all the stuff that we're throwing checks at people, we're throwing everything, we can't ever say, oh, by the way, we're going to have a one month where we only charge you 6% on your credit card nationwide. God, it'd be like throwing God knows what in front of a bull. What do you mean? I mean the simple stuff. I mean, Manny, are you astounded by the stuff that isn't happening versus the stuff that is?
I don't know. I'm just astounded by it all.
I mean, we're not going to. Do you think the state that it closed everybody down yet another week when they send our building that has had four people in here for 12 weeks now? Do you think they're going to lower the tax rate? Are these people going to
definitely
pay
not?
Are they going to pay to rent everybody else in the building? I don't know. Hopefully they will. How are they going to pay it? I mean, I could see if you're a firm that, quote, can work from home. But what about the people on the second floor? Is what, the massage and beauty parlor or something? They're not working from home. How are they going to pay the rent? I mean, the lack of mentally putting pieces together from our alleged leaders is astounding to me. And I think we better figure out we ought to have a training class for leaders or something. I don't know. Something. So, David, how do you find on a day like yesterday? I mean, I thought 4 days we should show a little bit of a pause. Yet every day, some government is pouring money into the system. And for those of you that don't realize it, if $1 trillion goes into the mix in Europe, some percentage of that money comes here. It's like a big, it's like you can't pour water into one corner of the swimming pool and have it stay there. It goes through the whole pool. I mean, the international, if you start talking about maybe not China so much anymore because we're kind of, you know, screwing each other on that, but clearly the Japan, U.S., Euro dollar, pound pool is, I won't say it's all the same pool, Kevin, or Kevin, David, but it's reasonably the same pool. Would you agree or not?
Yeah.
Now, so if they pour in, so we've put in, let me ask you this question. We've put in $3 trillion in the last 4 to 6 weeks, and the people in Europe have put in $1 trillion, and going further here, it looks like. How much more can we do? Does it have to be $10 trillion in September, or what are we doing here?
I don't have any idea. By Powell's two, you know, discussions and following press, you know, to Congress, and then press conferences and 60 Minutes thereafter, you know, he says we're not close to the end. So, I mean, some had said, well, do you go to $11 trillion when $4 seemed preposterous? And, you know, he didn't say no. So I'm not saying he said yes, but it almost seems unlimited.
Why all of a sudden something happens someplace and I can't figure it out? Whether it's keeping the market up so the 200 people that actually run the country can actually sell and get the hell out of here, or something sinister like that, or some paper by some noted PhD that I didn't see. Why all of a sudden is this okay? Where 2 years ago, 6 months ago, 20 years ago, any time between the great inflation of the 70s and now, this would be considered a total mortal sin to do what they're doing. And now all of a sudden it's, quote, okay. What changed?
COVID-19.
We've had
and I'm not saying I agree with it, but when you shut down world economies, lock them down, you know, shut down the airlines, the cruise lines, the restaurants, the hotels, you know, the like, and even, you know, General Motors production, and you know, on and on and on and on. You can keep talking forever. Then the central banks say, hey, we're not going to let it, you know, this is a health issue. It's a virus-caused recession slash depression, whatever you want to call it, and we're not going to let it be like 2008, 2009, where the market goes down 50, 60%. We're just not going to let it, because the wealth, quote unquote, the wealth effect, the wealth psychology, the wealth something. And it, you know, I agreed with you to an extent, your sinister, you know, analogy with 200 people. But hey, you know what? You and I have a lot of folks with six figure and seven figure accounts. And you know what? From March 23rd, I'm not saying they're all up, you know, like the index is 40%, but they've all rebounded smartly.
Oh,
some have rebounded more than 40%. That is a comfort zone, and it's more than for 200 people. I'm not justifying the policy reaction at all, but it is effective to an extent.
But it comes with a price. And then,
no question. Absolutely. And then I don't know when somebody pays, or when we all pay, or when our children or grandchildren pay, but there is a payment down the road.
And there is, when you start doing stuff like this, you're picking winners.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
You're picking winners. But I have a couple of questions on specific stocks for you. I looked at yesterday, it's a huge rally. The stocks that, man, I don't look at every single stock, but the stocks that were up the most were Boeing and United Airlines. I, obviously, being a Chicago person, I'd like to see United Airlines, you know, not land totally on their face. And I'd like to see, clearly we don't want to lose Boeing, but I have no idea, David, the day either one of those companies even puts a nickel toward the bottom line. I mean, how can we, Boeing especially, 400 and some plane, and they laid off people. Of course, that always gives you a boost in your stock. But in this right now, I'm not so sure laying off more people into a depression helps anybody. but it always makes the stock go up. I mean, what do people think? How much money at what rate is the government going to give these guys to where 5 years from now this is all forgotten? I can't even begin to see it, especially when Asia's...
Well, it's not forgotten when the stock went from 400 and it's at, you know, whatever, 170.
Well, but I'm saying there, how much money a day, and if China's out of the mix on buying stuff, which we've seen, like we're trying to drive into that, whether we should or we shouldn't, that's a political... But where exactly are these 400 and some 737s on the ground going to go?
Well, they've started production, you know, they've started production with all these things parked in the parking lot. I think the market knows, or there's been a leak or whatever. And in full disclosure, I have one customer who bought it on their own with 25 shares total. So it's not something I own, nor am I touting it, nor am I buying it, nor am I selling it. That's it. So that's full disclosure. But I do think that the market knows that approval for 737 MAX is, I'm not going to say around the corner, but I think in the final stages for approval. And again, it doesn't mean that folks are going to buy it. I did hear something, I forget, I can't even remember who, not Thailand, somebody in the Asian Pacific Basin region said that once it's approved that they'll buy 60. I mean, not a big number or whatever, but then that the leasing, Air Lease, came on and said they're going to start leasing them again, and they're doing the go-ahead for parts replacement companies to come forth. So there is something going on in the price. You know, I mean, Trump totally shut off passenger traffic between China and U.S., you know, as the situation with Hong Kong and Huawei and whatever seems to be getting worse, and the stock rallied. So the market knows something. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but there's hints out there.
Well, that's the part that I continually, I mean, I probably say it too often, but you know, David, I'm from the Chicago school that the market knew everything and knows all. I think the market's being blinded by, you can't see the sun because of the dollar bills ringing on your head. I mean,
I think to a great extent you're right.
But I'm just looking at the United Airlines situation again. I'm a believer, but I couldn't in any kind of conscience. I mean, if I had, you know, obviously if I did my protected stuff and did the puts and stuff, I could do it. The chances of me, with all the stocks to pick right now, chances of me throwing somebody's money in United Airlines are zero. It's like the tobacco companies when they had, you know, 50 bazillion court cases all over the place. Why pick United?
Well, how about XRT? The retail ETF.
Yep.
Low at 26.30, 43.18 at yesterday's close. Up 70%, $3, 7% from an all-time high.
Well,
almost equally weighted. Top issue holds 3%. It's not like they're loaded in Amazon. Amazon's about 6th or 7th on their list of holdings at about 2.5%. So, I mean, they're holding all this retail stuff that on a good day is going to be half open. And, you know, the things rallied 70% in a month and a half, and the 7% from all-time highs.
Well, I'm going to take a stab at an explanation there, and kick me if you think I'm wrong. If there's 15 realtors left, and there's an index on those 15 realtors, or 5 airlines left, and there's an index on that, you could, that's just me talking, I could buy that, and Matty, you kick me as well, I could buy that list of retailers with the idea, with the, you know, the smug idea that if Matty Weber's blue jean joint goes under, that the other 14 are going to pick up the sales, and in total, the number is going to be okay. I'm betting on a retail.
It's company. Only if it's going to be online.
Okay, but what I'm saying is,
in-house full capacity, it's going to be a ways off.
Okay, but
unless you say a vaccine is here, it's not going to happen.
What I'm saying is, when people spin out of this mess, there's people that are out of work. There's people also. that are at home that have been getting paychecks that haven't spent money, right?
No question.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, it's one thing for me to bet on the airline industry, because I have a feeling that a few years from now, the airline industry will be fine. It's quite different to say I want to invest in this particular airline's stock. But I'm convinced that there will be a United Airlines 2 years from now. I'm just not 100% convinced that my stock's going to be worth anything, because they did that before, 20 years ago.
Right.
Anyway, David, thank you very much, buddy. We'll talk on Monday. S&P futures down 16, NASDAQ futures down 22. We've made a couple attempts to rally here, but we keep coming right back down to this number. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.